Welcome back to episode 100 of the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by both Brian Joyner and Matt Collins of Over the Monster to celebrate the World Series victory of the Boston Red Sox in 2018. Damn, it feels good for this to happen, and that it's happening on our 100th episode is pretty damn cool, too. So, guys,
that is some amazing long-term planning.
Yeah,
this was... this is why we skipped the Phantom episode 97, in case you guys have noticed that. So, yeah, it's awesome that this thing happened. A little bit of details to get them out of the way so we can kind of talk about this. But the reason why this Red Sox club is being talked about as the greatest club in Red Sox history is because they defeated a 100-win Yankees club, followed by a 103-win defending world champion Houston Astros club, followed by a Dodgers team that had been to back-to-back World Series and was third in baseball in run differential, which by Pythagorean record pretty much put them at about 100 wins as well. So the slate that these guys faced was just about as good as it gets. They went 11-3 in the playoffs, finished with 119 total wins, and a lot's been made about how many runs they scored with two outs and running and runners in scoring position. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Guys, what's your reaction to this whole thing?
I'm pretty fucking happy about it, I'll say that.
And we were all right.
Shit, yeah, man. Yeah.
Five games.
Every single one of us, we were so petrified of that prediction, and it ended up coming true.
It was pretty close to not coming true, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it sure was. There were a couple moments there where this series could have gone either way. But do you guys agree? I mean, let's talk about this right off the bat. Is this the most talented, most accomplished Red Sox team of all time?
I mean, there's no argument against it, at least for accomplished. And they won 108 games and then rolled through a crazy playoff gauntlet. The only person I've heard not agree with it is Harold Reynolds, so I think that tells you all I need to know.
Yeah, it's not just the playoff performance, because
it's the regular season. I think it's the regular
season. It's everything. It's everything. I think Nate tweeted before the game yesterday, Nate Silver, that they were top 10 by their models, a top 10 historic team.
Do they have a top 10 historic list out right now?
Well, if they have it out, that should be something we could check.
They have something. I don't know when it was from, but I was looking at it to write something the other day.
I have my methods. I might be able to get access to the proprietary information.
Yeah,
I won't tell you how.
That's pretty cool, though, that they're in that conversation. And, you know, all the articles that I've been reading today, because I've been, you know, just trying to read as much as I possibly can about this whole thing, say that it's really between them and the 1998 Yankees. And, you know, I did the head-to-head comparison this year between them, the Yankees, and the 116-win Mariners. And I honestly liked the Red Sox roster more, and that was before – you know, the Red Sox turned out to have this amazing bullpen that was just lights out. So, in my mind, this is about as good as it gets for a baseball team.
Yeah, I don't know if I put them over the Yankees. I don't know that I wouldn't either. But I've said many times, baseball didn't start till 98, so the Red Sox are at least one of the two best teams.
The thing with the Yankees teams is they didn't have offensive superstars like Mookie and JD.
No.
The ones that won the World Series, at least.
No, they were sneakily well-rounded clubs without huge stars. Derek Jeter actually led that club in WAR that year, and I think he was like a 6.5 WAR player.
So, and I think... I mean, the role players have been good. I mean, the role players were amazing, obviously. But so were the stars. Like, everyone all year had their chance to be good. And everyone just – it's not that – like, Mookie and JD did it several. But every other player just had a period where they just wrecked shit. And it, along with the other contributions, except for like late August, early September, it was fine. And like they just rolled. And that turned out to be the outlier in the year, especially given the postseason. They were like, say, look, you look back, and if you want to think, but they were able to think ahead in September from the very beginning, to some degree. If they looked at it at the beginning of September and made a plan to get through 2 months, it worked, because that was just a masterpiece.
Yeah, I don't know how much they could plan this the way that it went.
For sure, I just mean that like everything they did was right.
Yeah.
Well, I think they planned rest, and I think resting their pitchers obviously was important because they leaned on those guys so heavily in October. Obviously, they couldn't plan like exact things, but yeah, I think people that were like super panicking over September are kind of feeling a little stupid, and like it was pretty clear that they didn't care a ton about wins and losses that month.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed like they took the foot off the pedal for that month to get people right. You know, the decision to shut down Barnes and not bring Sale back as quick as possible, and you know, things like that. And even the fact that they took their time with Kelly, like they did, you know, not pitching him in huge situations and working him back into the circle of trust. We saw that pay huge dividends. I think the two biggest reasons, and you guys can feel free to disagree with me, for this playoff run being as dominant as it was, is the success of the bullpen coupled with their ridiculously historic ability to score with two outs and runners in scoring position. Would you guys agree with that?
I mean, to me, the two-out thing is bigger than anything.
I would,
because it was so consistent, and so it's so nice when it happens. The bullpen was amazing, but also I separate Eovaldi off from the bullpen. Well, I consider him his own thing. But otherwise, you'd have, you know, you could pick your poison. Matt obviously will say bullpen, but you could have said you knew that before.
I'm not going to ask the question. I don't know if this counts as bullpen, but I mean, I just think it's the starters, like, but doing everything. And not even their performance so much as just how much they bought in. Like, Eovaldi obviously is a maniac, but everybody, all four of their starters, Porcello was Eovaldi in the first, like, round and a half.
Yeah, he was.
He was the guy that was coming in game one, game two, in the eighth inning.
Do you think this is going to be something teams do in the postseason as it's sort of like a sort of shifting? I mean, the Dodgers took shifting to a, I think, bad extreme. Good for us.
I don't know if teams.
But do you think they're going to start the pitching is going to look at it like, I'm just going to pitch as much as I can in this series and sign me up for that?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on the team, I guess. Because, like, if the Brewers were in the World Series, they wouldn't have done that because their bullpen was just insane. But the Red Sox didn't have that kind of talent. So I guess it might make building a super bullpen actually less important. But also, I think what happened with the Red Sox is, I think if you simulated this postseason 1,000 times or whatever, I don't know how many times they get this kind of performance from their pitching. I mean, it was just everything lined up perfectly.
Yeah, I also want to point out the fact that I think these guys, these four starters, were willing to do what they did because of how much they like this team and because of how much they like each other and Alex Cora, and the fact that, like, these guys are all pretty much lining up outside of his office every single day to say that they could throw an extra inning. And even Pedro, I don't know if you guys saw Pedro talking about it. I think he was talking to Eovaldi last night, when they won the World Series, and he was basically saying, like, you know, you're a maniac, like, doing this with, you know, your contract year. You know, basically the fact that these guys were willing to risk life and limb and career to go out and throw like this. And I don't know how many teams like each other and have that much disregard for their body the way that these guys did, because I mean, look at how many times Price got up. That was ridiculous. He was up and warmed every day.
Yeah, I think every game except for game one of the World Series.
And Eovaldi in the pen last night? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was absurd. He was in the pen game four, too. He didn't throw, but he was in there. But I think, I don't know, I kind of think if you make it this far, your team's pretty close, and most of the guys are going to do. I mean, they've been working their whole life to win a World Series. I think most MLB players would be willing to put their body on the line, whether it's smart or not. But I don't know. This is a special group of pitchers, and I think that's the thing I'm going to remember the most about this postseason.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I want to get to some of the stats because they are just insane. Like I mentioned before, 53.6% of the runs in the postseason scored with two outs and runners in scoring position. Fewest losses by a World Series team in over a decade. For the entire playoffs with two outs and runners in scoring position, the team batted with a 1,347 OPS, that's like Barry Bonds. In the bullpen as a whole over the postseason, which we were, you know, shitting our pants over headed into the postseason, had a 187 batting average against and a 271 ERA throughout the whole thing. And I want to point out a few individual performances here. Kelly finished with 11.1 innings pitched and a 0.79 ERA. Barnes, 10.1 innings pitched, a 0.87 ERA. Brazier, 8.2 innings pitched, a 104 ERA. And Nate the Freak Eovaldi, who does everything, 22.1 innings pitched, 1.61 ERA across everything that he did.
Jake, what was that OPS exactly?
1347.
Jeez, okay. Bonds had three seasons above 1347.
Yeah, that's.
I was just curious because as soon as you said it, I wanted to see if it was true. In his four big years, he was right around that the whole time.
That's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, like I said, he simulated 1,000 times. That's not happening more than a couple, but we're in the right simulation, I guess. That was something to watch.
The wild thing about this is, you know, you guys probably read as many of these articles as I did. You know, people like Lindbergh and all these other people trying to disprove this clutch factor. But every time you looked at it with the Red Sox, even through the regular season, they were a great team with two outs and runners in scoring position. Like, clearly not this good as they were in the playoffs, but this was a consistent thing for this team all year, and it was led by Mookie Betts.
In the regular season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this offense, I think there's some aspect of clutch or just relentless or however you want to phrase it, but I think it's mostly that they're really fucking good. They have so much talent that and all these guys, even when they're not hitting well, they usually put up good at-bats, and that can just lead to good things happening. Even if you're not the guy to do it, you're making the pitcher work a little more. So, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about the atmosphere in the clubhouse, but I think it's mostly just about how talented they are.
Really is amazing. Really is. One of the things that I'm going to remember from this World Series is that Sale, JD, Mookie, and Xander really didn't dominate. In fact, a lot of them struggled through the World Series. Yeah, I mean, Mookie was flat-out terrible for most of it. JD was injured, so I think that definitely affected him. Sale wasn't great, and Xander was not great either. He had like a 650 OPS. Or maybe
I'm surprised it was that high.
It might have been 630, but it wasn't great throughout that. And the fact that, like,
in the World Series, or he had a 422 OPS in the World Series.
I think it was through the postseason he might have.
Okay,
had,
like, yeah, that makes more sense. But, yeah, because he was bad.
Like, guys like Vasquez seeing the ball well, you know, Pierce doing what he did. Just performances from guys, Jackie Bradley Jr., that you didn't expect. The fact that it came from those guys was remarkable.
And by the way, I read MLB.com. They had a it was a list of the top 10 World Series percentage added hit the playoffs, the Red Sox. And Mitch Moreland's home run is in there. And it's like, that home run was huge.
I mean, that changed everything.
That was one I like. And everyone, they came up with it over and over and over.
I mean, Steve Pierce, after that Mitch Moreland home run tying up that game like that, those two guys, Brian, like you said, those two guys changed the whole series. If those two hits don't happen, then we're talking about a 2-2 series in LA for game 5, and the momentum has completely shifted.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's like Pierce and Mookie, in my mind, by the end of the series, sort of switch places. And then when Mookie hit the home run in game five, when he hit the home run, I was like, oh, well, we're clearly going to win now if Mookie's hitting home runs.
Oh, the game is over by that point. I thought game five was over when Pierce hit his home run in the first inning.
I mean, me too, but...
But then home run.
Yeah, that scared me a little bit. But I don't know. Once the Red Sox got a lead, I just did not see them losing it.
Price was a monster, man. He was a monster.
Oh, it was incredible. And speaking of Price and Pierce, I thought Price should have won the MVP. But I kind of think it's fitting that it was Pierce, just because, like you said, they had so many of these performances from, like, these role players. And so it just feels fitting. You can't give it to everybody, so it kind of feels fitting to give it to a role player instead of Price.
And Price got the biggest victory of all, the biggest fuck you to everyone.
he didn't miss his chance in that press conference.
How could you get anything better, you know?
Oh, I don't think he. Pierce strikes me as a guy who's going to use that truck more than Price would. I'll say that.
I tweeted that last night, that he is actually going to drive that truck.
Yeah, I'm sure he will.
Yeah, that was a pretty nice truck. But let's get to the Price quote here. He said it was tough, absolutely. Price said in response to a question about the difficulty of overcoming his reputation for pitching poorly in the playoffs. To answer that question in spring training day and day and day and day, over and over and over and over, anytime it got to September playoffs, I hold all the cards now, and that feels so good. I can't tell you how good it feels to hold that trump card, and you guys have had it for a long time. You've played that card extremely well, but you don't have it anymore. None of you do, and that feels really good.
Hell yeah.
That's just so up the ass of everybody who criticized
him. He's so happy right now. I don't know if you saw him talking about his elbow too. Someone asked him about how he pitched so often in the World Series, and he said, remember that magic elbow quote or whatever it was?
Yeah.
He brought that back up and was like, just basically like, you guys all made fun of me, and now you're seeing that it was actually true. He's like, I could pitch again tomorrow and I would have a problem. And he's fucking rolling with this, and I love it.
He's got his calcified UCL that he can just throw anytime he wants.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but this is... I don't know how he did that, what he did.
So, let's talk about those three heroic performances. Eovaldi's performance, Pierce's performance, and Price. These three were the ones that were kind of up for the MVP. These are the guys we were talking about. I want to get to Eovaldi first here. How did you guys feel about that performance from Eovaldi in Game 6 Game 4? Game 3. It was Friday night, right? So, it was Game 3.
It was Saturday morning.
Yeah. When he went out there, 6 innings, like 97 pitches or something like that, and he was basically tossing 100 after throwing back-to-back days.
That was the most impressive pitching performance I think I've ever seen.
Better than Pedro against Cleveland?
Yeah, so that's what I was going to bring up. For me, it was, just because that 99 series was like the first playoff series I watched, and I didn't really know what was going on. So I didn't really have the proper context for it, I guess. So that doesn't really count for me. Pedro's is probably more, like, objectively better, but what I saw from Evaldi, I've never, like, felt that way while I was watching somebody pitch.
Yeah, you were also, like, in a hallucinatory state.
I didn't start hallucinating until, like, 8 o'clock the next day. But, yeah, that game was insane. I'm going to remember that game more than anything, which is funny because it's the only game they lost.
Yeah, you know, I went to sleep after the Kinsler thing because I was just like, I got kids. So I woke up and I was just expecting the Red Sox not to win because it's a road game and extra innings. So, and I wake up and I see the score. And just some time goes by and I'm just like, I see that Eovaldi lost, and then it's seeing people saying great things about him. I was like, yeah, he was great, but like, if they lost, you probably right after I went, like, oh shit, it went 18 innings. sorry, Matt.
That game ended 45 minutes before I had to go to work. I actually thought it was still going to be going when I had to go to work.
That's absurd.
It was crazy.
I went to bed at 3:01, so right after like the 16th inning had ended, kept falling asleep.
I mean, the thing was that game, nothing really happened between like Kinsler's error and that home run. Like, neither side was doing anything.
No, it was a battle of attrition at that point.
Yeah.
It's like the hockey games that go forever.
Yeah.
And just someone score a goal. Come on.
I like
someone hit a homer.
I like what a rallying cry that was for the club, though, because you know, all the reports, Cora basically talking about it, was saying, you know, everybody was coming up to him after that and saying, hey, I'm available to start. I'm available to pitch the next day. You know, Porcello's talking about how he's watching this performance and crying about it because it was so heroic. I mean, this clearly overcame any feelings that a team has about being deflated by a huge loss like that. Like, any other time a team loses a game in 18 innings in the playoffs and have to use that many guys, the thought is that that team's going to feel deflated. It's going to feel like losing two games. That's the old cliche. But I think that Eovaldi completely erased that feeling for this clubhouse.
I think they felt like they won.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they also knew they only got one Walker Buehler. He's not starting again. Right.
I can't believe Walker Buehler didn't pitch again in that series too.
Yeah, Dave Roberts was not. I wasn't into what they did for a lot of the series. I mean, as a Red Sox fan,
we didn't see as much Urias as I thought either, and Urias was awesome.
Yeah, I think he only pitched back-to-back games like once the entire season. I don't think he was ever going to be a huge part of it. But Game 3, I mean, obviously Eovaldi should be the biggest story, and he deserves every bit of praise he gets, probably more, but Nunez was, he died like 5 times. He died for our sins and he couldn't leave the game. It was unbelievable.
Game 4,
yeah, he couldn't even stand up. Like, every time something happened, he just ended up on the ground. It was unbelievable. That guy has taken some shit this year, but I think that was as gutty as what Eovaldi did. I mean, he literally couldn't move, and he was just throwing his body around everywhere.
Yeah, he re-upped today. He said he's coming back for that $5 million option too.
We knew that was gonna happen.
He said with the post game guys that Cora's biggest thing is that Cora makes him feel like he's a better player than he actually is.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool quote.
Did you see Cora talking about Nunez?
No.
Saying he's the most dramatic player he's ever been around. Every time he gets hurt, he acts like it's the end of the world.
Oh, yeah. He was playing that up.
Oh, well, he said that every time he fell, Nunez is yelling, don't take me out, don't take me out. And Cora's yelling back, we can't take you out. We have no more players.
That's hilarious. But let's get to Pierce here for a second. So Pierce has the big home run in the Houston series. Pierce has basically every big hit in this series too. I mean, Brian and I were talking about Pierce last time too. I know we were both talking about him as an X factor, and you agreed, Matt. I mean, we all kind of thought that that Pierce was going to have something to say about this series, especially with as many lefties as they had. But, I mean, man.
Dombrowski. You're being very kind to Matt right now. That's very nice of you.
I don't think I said anything bad about Pierce. I definitely took the Muncy over him, but...
Yeah. Well, I think I took the Red Sox.
You wouldn't have taken Muncy if you knew he wasn't going to play half the time.
Yeah, well, that is true.
Yeah, so, I mean, Pierce, obviously this is why I was so high on him, right? Like, this is what I thought was had the potential for happening in this series, is Pierce having this type of an impact. And even this exceeded anything I thought was
I was going to say, nobody possible. Could have predicted this.
No, no, but, you know, like...
This is insane. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just it's tough to explain. But the way that he played, there's no way that this team comes close to doing what they did without Steve Pierce this year. And Dombrowski has to be just, like, sitting back, giving the double bird to every single person who criticized him at the deadline, because Eovaldi and Pierce basically are the biggest reasons why this postseason happened the way it did.
The Blue Jays paid money to trade Pierce. It's insane. I totally forgot about that until last night.
People on top of that, and Jake alluded to this intentionally or not, but it would be right either way, that he also contributed on defense with those absurd stretches.
Yeah.
Like, did he pull out of nowhere?
Yeah, he's not a defensive player. I don't know where that came from. But you're right. He made a huge impact defensively.
Huge playoffs for the University of South Carolina, too. Jackie Bradley yeah. Jr. and Steve Pierce getting MVPs.
Both MVPs, yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Let's get to Price, though, because we talked about Price's quote. We talked about Price a little bit. Here are Price's stats for the postseason. 26 innings pitched, 3.46 ERA, way better than he's ever been. But over the last 13.2 innings pitched, where Price became playoff Price, he had a 1.98 ERA and was pretty much pitching all the friggin' time and ended with three straight wins, including 7-plus innings in the World Series clincher on short rest. The narrative is done. Bury it. Like, I can't say shit about him forever. Like, no one can. He's...
We weren't. You were.
Yeah, but, like, he hadn't done it, and now he has. And that's it. Like, he was...
Okay, but... I was thinking about this earlier because I do find it interesting, because when a player gets in the position of you have to, because he didn't have to, the one thing is definitely true on every level is he didn't have to be this good to like shake the monkey off his back or like to not bear the burden anymore, you know, like, this is something extra. But if the only way he can sort of get rid of this problem is through the playoffs, is it fair to, during a season, hold it against him proactively, like looking forward to the following playoffs? That's the only thing. It's like people only, they only fall short until they don't. I don't know. You know, I just – you hated him. Hated.
Yep. And I'll defend myself as to why I did, and I'll go into it right now. Price, before the postseason, led all pitchers with 60-plus postseason innings in ERA. Like, he was historically bad in the postseason. And the thing that frustrated me the most about David Price up until really the last month and change of the season – was that he was not changing the way that he pitched. I remember doing a midseason analysis of how Price was pitching, and this was still when he was overly relying on his cutter. He hadn't changed a lot of things. He was throwing a tremendous amount of hard pitches. He basically stopped throwing his changeup and his curve. Like, he wasn't doing those things anymore, and I couldn't understand why a guy with reduced stuff at 33 years old was not changing what he was doing, even though he knew it wasn't working. And so that was what made me think this guy mentally doesn't have the ability to accept that he can't do it anymore. But then he changed finally,
that.
He did.
He changed that a while like May, June-ish.
I want to say he changed, doing what he did against like Houston in those guys a little bit later, because even when he started to have success in the second half, he was not throwing the changeup near as much as he was towards the end. And the changeup became the reason why he was the David Price that we saw.
I guess, but I mean, he was throwing his changeup 21% in June, 23% in July, and then he got up to 27, 28. But I mean, he was throwing it. He said something, I think it was around June, that it kind of clicked that he made that change. I don't think you give enough credit for when he changed. I think because he stepped up in a huge way when Sale got hurt, and that was right around the All-Star break.
He definitely did, but I think that that change took a lot longer than I thought it should have for someone with reduced stuff like he had.
I guess, but it doesn't really matter how long it took now because it worked.
No, I totally get that, but that's why I took the stance that I did on Price. Fair enough.
Okay. Well, I didn't think it was fair. And I don't think it's fair now, but the good part is it's over. David Price has all the cards now, Jake.
That's right.
He's back on Twitter, too.
He can tell me to stick it up my ass, so that's fine. I'll do it.
He cried during his press conference, too, yesterday. Someone asked him what it meant to be a good teammate, and he started crying.
It means doing treatment with Eovaldi after everybody's still on the bus. That's what that means.
It means playing Fortnite with Eovaldi before game 5.
He really loves
that. That was awesome. Someone was relating the Eovaldi anecdote that, like, he was – I don't remember who it was. It was probably Ken Rosenthal because he's creepy. but he was like, after the game, David Price – stood by Nathan Eovaldi the whole time. He sat next to him on the bus. Went back to the, like, and there was no, like, and then they, but it was just like he sat next to him the whole time.
He shared an ice bath with him.
It's what I, yeah, what, okay.
Is he trying to say that Eovaldi is the reason Price?
No, he's trying to say that Price was a good teammate because he stuck by Eovaldi, but, like, you don't need to be stuck to a person to stick by them. But it worked. So you get those guys are, that sounds like a great buddy comedy. I would pick.
Eovaldi is legendary in the MLB for being a good teammate too. He's like one of these legendary good guys.
So is Price. And Price never got enough credit for how good of a teammate he is. He still doesn't everywhere he's gone. Pitchers, especially young pitchers, talk about what a great mentor he is.
Yeah.
He's awful with the media. That's probably why he doesn't get the credit he gets for that. But right. He's a leader. But he's a number one clubhouse guy on that pitching staff, I think.
I still have to say that I don't think that the way that he acted towards the media and some of the things that he said and airing things out in public are good examples for young teammates. But I agree with you that he's a great teammate.
I think everybody should deal with the media like that.
And I also trust. Like,
you're part of the media, Matt.
No, I'm not. If I don't
Matt,
talk
you're
to
like,
them, then I'm
Matt,
not.
you are like, you got one foot in a stream, so we can see on your pant leg that you've been standing in the stream. And which is not pee, so we know you've been sports writing, sir. But he's weird because he strikes me as fundamentally similar to the people he dislikes. And I understand his antagonism insofar as that, like, I can't understand, like, what it is to be in, like, baseball celebrity culture. Like, that's, I don't know what that's like, but I imagine it's annoying. So factoring that in, except for the egg thing, which just sounded mean, like, just don't be an asshole. Like, you can be an asshole to reporters and fuck around, but don't you scream at people because Drellick made you mad, that's probably fine. But don't yell at Eck. Come on. Other than that, nothing he's done really has bothered me. And it is very, very cool for him. And now, Jake, what does he do?
I was just going to ask you that, so I'm glad you asked me. I think he's going to stay. I don't think it, entering his age 34 season, that he's going to opt out and get more than 4 and 127 on the open market.
He will never be booed again.
No. And he's settled in here. He loves his teammates. I don't think he's going anywhere. But I do think that if he were to opt out, that he would get a deal, especially in the thin pitching market the way that it is, that is close enough to that deal that the players' union wouldn't really care that much if he opted out.
I don't think he'd get anything close.
But look at who's on the market. It's like Corbin and nothing.
I mean, I don't think free agents are getting paid anymore, especially not when they're entering their age 33 season.
I think it's his age 34 season.
33.
Okay.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
I agree with Matt.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the Harpers and the Machados and those guys are going to get paid because they're so young. But guys who are 30 and older, I think they're done getting paid.
So what's the percentage you guys put on an opt-out?
5.
Sure. Hey, Jake, I want to add something to the agenda on the fly here. Yeah. I feel like it might be covered in the questions, but I think it's important to get to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with Matt. What were your favorite moments of the playoffs in general and the World Series specifically? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, you are. Fuck.
You can work backward.
The play.
Just start with the World Series.
All right. I guess does Evaldi count? Like the Game 3 Evaldi? I already said sure. That's what I'm gonna remember the most. So I know it was ended up losing, but that's what's gonna stick with me. In the playoffs, I guess Benintendi's catch, that absurd Astros game.
Oh yeah, that was a great catch.
I think those are probably the top two.
Oh man. I don't know. Can I just say, like, Steve Pierce? Like, just enjoying the hell out of Steve Pierce. Everything that he did. He had my favorite moment maybe in the ALCS. I think he had my favorite moment in the World Series, the way that he stepped up in Game 5. I don't know. Like, it just doesn't get much better than that for me. Is just a role player like that having his moment and doing it the way that he did it. I'm all about Steve Pierce right now.
Have you heard he's a Red Sox? He grew up a Red Sox fan. Did you hear that?
I have heard that from a couple.
Big if true. Big if true. I would say, like, my favorite these are basically the same thing, but two different players. And also, like, I love Moreland's home run. I'm just sort of going for a little, not the obvious ones. And then Nunez's home run in game.
Yeah, I was going to say that, too. I was just going to bring that up.
That one, and then I think JD, and I think it was against the Tigers. I can't remember. It was on a very similar pitch. It was down and in. And he hit a home run or a double. And it was just one of those things. It was I don't remember who it was. But it was like the guys like Alfred Payton when they were guarding Steph Curry the other night, and he literally dribbled into his face a triple team and shot like a 35-foot three-pointer. Like it was nothing. And he just literally just shrugged, like, what am I going to do? Those just hitting that pitch, one by a guy you expect to hit it and one by a guy you don't, when those things happen, it just it makes me happy. And it makes the other team so scared. And that's what I love about it.
I got old takes exposed on that Nunez home run.
I saw you, yeah, but you know, that's not – that's so – I saw that, and that's just a misapplication of that thing. That's
– Yeah. I don't know.
I want to point out a couple other.
That's not a take. Saying Eduardo Nunez has not hit well is just like a fact. You know.
I think
I was fine with it.
I think one of my favorite moments was the Brazier get back in the fucking box thing. I still think that moment was a game changer in the playoffs. I really think that was a tone setter because, you know, like it or not, the Yankees take up a lot of real estate in the Red Sox heads. You know, we even saw that them celebrating New York last night as they won the World Series. So I think that, you know, just kind of establishing the fact that Brazier wasn't going to come in and crap himself again and that he was going to take charge, that was huge. And then the other guy who I enjoyed the most on the opposite side of the ball was Joe Kelly this entire run. Just like, oh my God, how did Joe Kelly transform into this? Like,
no, you know, this is always inside Joe Kelly. You know it.
No,
you
just don't know. Not like this, dude.
Yeah, yes, like this.
Like this.
Yes, no, like this.
No way. He's the stage is bigger.
Jake. I mean, this good, okay, but like he's had this, the whole thing with Joe Kelly is like this has been inside of him. The whole thing.
The stuff is there, but I think his breaking stuff is different right now too, though. I think he's.
Yeah, it wouldn't be in 6 weeks again, but like right now it was good, and that's the best part.
Everything was working in a way that I've never seen it work for Joe. And he was the biggest surprise
to me. In the whole playoffs.
I mean, he straight up earned himself a contract with this playoff performance. Right?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean,
I don't know if it works like that, but I think a lot of people would agree with you. I'll say that.
Might need a closer.
Let's talk about Chris Sale being on the mound to close out the entire thing after saying in the spring that that would be his dream. That was pretty cool. Those sliders were filthy.
Yeah, I'm glad they got those insurance runs because he wasn't going to be in there. They said if it wasn't more than two runs, he wasn't going to be in there. So I'm glad he got that chance, and I'm glad he struck out Machado to end it. That was perfect.
And him falling to a knee.
That is the best.
He was such a putz in that whole series, wasn't he?
I'm so excited to hate Machado on the Yankees next year.
And when Machado came up, I was like, oh, this is over. This chump is gonna get shot.
They didn't say like anything about it on the broadcast, but Kelly and Sale struck out six guys in a row to end that game.
Wow.
I don't know how that didn't like get even a mention. I mean, I guess
I think they were excited, garbage.
Well, I mean, I feel like as it's leading up, you could say, oh, Sale just struck out their fourth guy in a row. Oh, he struck out the fifth guy. I don't know. I was kind of noticing that. And Smoltz is awful at his job anyway, so.
What about Kelly coming off the mound, just yelling F-bombs?
Hey, that's Kelly, whether he's good or bad. It's just a different kind of F-bomb, but.
Yeah, he was something special. I want to talk about mistakes by Alex Cora a little bit, just because there was one that really stuck out to me.
That Matt and I disagree on. Might be the same one.
Cora admitted that he made a mistake on that.
Game three, Cora.
He's taking one for the team. He's the manager, Matt.
Cora pitching to Puig in that situation when Barnes was on deck to me was.
Game four?
Game three. Yeah, game three. Game three.
What, the Puig home run?
No, the Puig hit in game three. When Barnes was on deck and Barnes was batting like 200, and he decided to. It was the one where.
Oh, where Kinsler made the error.
Exactly. And Puig hits it up the middle, and Kinsler should have made that play, but Kinsler slipped. But I don't even think that Barnes makes contact on that. And I think that that was just such a no-brainer because you had the force play if you put him on as well. So. I didn't understand that on any level.
See, Matt, to me, that is a much bigger mistake.
I didn't think it was a mistake at the time, so I can't really say it now. I get it, but they got what they wanted.
But
it worked.
Right, but so I'm on the other side of that. So you see, like, as I said, I can't go back and change. for reference, our thing was over whether Erod should be pitching to Puig in game four. And at the time, as it happened, I was like, well, he's got a two-hitter in the World Series. And I know he's hasn't pitched this long in a while, but hey, he's well-rested. I understood it. Now, I understand the case against it. But at the time, I thought he had a two-hitter in the World Series in the sixth inning. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the Puig thing goes, I don't remember. Like, I remember thinking about it at the time and deciding I thought it was fine pitching to Puig, but I don't remember the context enough to really tell you why I thought that. That was so many things have happened since then.
I believe there was men on first and third at the time.
No, I mean, I remember. I just don't remember my reasoning, and I don't think I'm ever going to – I lost enough brain cells this weekend that I don't think I'm ever going to get that reasoning back.
Yeah, it's really.
Do you feel changed by game three, Matt? Like, do you feel like
do I feel changed as a person?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I feel like Saturday was kind of wild, and I had a lot of customers asking me if I was baked because I was so tired.
But... Were you baked?
If I was baked, I would have been asleep.
All right, so for this whole World Series run, Cora or Dombrowski deserve more credit. Both of them deserve a ton.
I don't want to pick.
No, you made me pick. I like this question. You made me pick predictions, so go.
Cora, I guess, but I don't know. Actually, no, Dombrowski.
Yeah, I go Dombrowski.
Wow, I'm shocked. I'm going to go Cora. I can't disagree with Dombo, but damn. I mean,
they're both at such a high level that it's hard to pick against.
Ultimately, the talent wins, and right. Dombrowski brought the talent.
I mean, this was the talk, though, right? This was the thing. Everybody, you know, all the big media personalities, it was all Dombrowski came in here. He traded all these guys. If they don't win the World Series within the next 3 years, it's a failure. And then we all three agreed before the playoffs started, which is a rarity in its own self, that Dombrowski would and should be like hung up by his feet if the bullpen was the reason why they don't advance in the playoffs. And man, he's you know, basically doing a price right now to everybody.
Well, I was going to say, the flip side of that is when they did succeed, he deserves all the credit.
Yeah, exactly.
If he's going to get the blame, then he gets the credit too. He was really emotional after they won too, for good reason, obviously. Yeah, but I mean, I think he knows. Like, he put himself out there, and like he said himself, it's been a really long time since he got to celebrate like that. So I was really happy for him.
The other thing is with everyone on these big teams, now that it acts functionally, especially among these teams in the playoffs, like soccer, like European soccer, with Astros, Yankees, Dodgers, Cubs, Red Sox, you know, those teams. There are some others that can contend, but the players on these teams, I think that the cultures on all the teams are very, very strong. Because of how good these players are. So when the sort of naturally comes out when it's the only teams you play in the playoffs and you kick their ass. So it's I loved every second of it. But I'm glad there weren't any more games.
Yeah, I'm glad to be finally getting some rest here. Let's go with the big question here. Where does this rank for you guys amongst the four World Series runs? 04, 07, 13, and 18. How would you guys rank those runs? We'll go Matt first. How would you rank them?
It's number one for me. And I know it's not going to be for other people. But I've never followed the team. Well, last year I did too, but I followed this team so close, and it's just – it was unbelievable. I don't really know how to articulate just what I'm feeling, but I said it today. I didn't really feel anything until I started driving. Until I started driving home from work today, and it like that was like my first time where I wasn't either going to work or going home to watch a baseball game. And I don't know, man. This is I'm never gonna see anything like this again. And I know emotionally it wasn't for most people. It's not gonna top 04 or 13, and I get that. But for me, it's number one.
I don't know why they couldn't do it again next year the way they did it.
They're not gonna do this again.
Okay, I mean,
obviously they might, but this is we already talked about it. This is one of the best teams of all time.
Right. So that's a separate question, though. This is not. Jake is asking an emotional react question, but that's the question. For me, it's three, and number one. I feel like number one is actually 2013 because 2004 like belongs to everyone in a way that's 2000, the reason this team is below 2013 despite being a better baseball team is that it was sort of major league-ish. And they have been so bad. And this team is the best. And it was satisfying as a baseball fan to watch it played at this level. But it wrapped itself up very neatly. It was as drama-free as you could get, basically, with opponents this good.
And so part of the way emotion builds in a series didn't really – I mean, in the ask, it sort of did in all the series for small periods of time. But when the team is sort of more organic – and the series go longer. I feel like it just built more emotion, and both short term and long term, I think it'll end up being number three.
I have this as number two for me. 04, still number one. I mean, I have such vivid memories of 03 and the way I felt after 03 and 04 being what it was. You know, it was just. It was complete catharsis, and I don't think I've ever been more attached to a group of players on the Red Sox as I was to that club.
How old were you?
Oh, I was a freshman in high school, I think.
Oh my God, like that's just the perfect time right there.
Yeah, I loved everything about those guys. I mean, Bill Miller was like my dude back then, and I loved everything about that team. And for that to happen the way that it did after what happened to Wake the year before was just, man, I'm staring at a picture of the 04 club right above my computer. I mean, I'll always have that there. But for me, this was number two because I've never followed a team this closely, like Matt said, and this team is so homegrown. You know, some of these guys, and I've been following Xander forever, you know, since he was a J2 signing. You know, I've been following all these guys for this huge period of time. So it's almost as close to the 04 team for me as it gets. And I think that there's a sizable gap between those two for me and 07-13. I would have 07 third and 13 fourth. And I think the big reason why I feel a little bit of a disconnect from 13 was just because, you know, I was living in D.C. at the time, and obviously I followed it the same way, but I didn't have that, like, that youthful emotional connection to the players in 13 the same way that I did for the other clubs. And a fair amount of the important guys on 13 were, like, one-year mercenary-type dudes who came in and, like, had these just incredible years.
Yeah, it's a sports movie, Jake. It was a sports movie.
Yeah, no, it really was. It really was. And I will never downplay what that meant for the city and how awesome it was. But, like, just personally, it doesn't stack up. And as far as the 07 team goes, that team was just kind of a wagon, which, you know, we know the story of 07. They just kind of steamrolled. But I think that the road that 18 took to get here was just – it was unlike anything we'll probably ever see.
Well, this team is better than is better than 07, but 07's victory felt a lot more like – once the Cleveland comeback started to gain some momentum, it seemed much more by the book as it was happening, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it was just – it was a glacier just flattening everything in its path. That team was ridiculous.
Look at Mr. History Teacher.
Should we get to some listener questions, guys? Matt, I'm curious to get your final three. Where would you rank the other three? You only gave us one.
Yeah, so I'd probably go 13 and 04 are 2-3. I don't know. Ask me on a different day, and they would be a different order. They're pretty much tied. And then 07's last. I don't really want to downplay it because that season was awesome, and I was 16 during that season, which I feel like was kind of the perfect time to be a baseball fan. That was like my favorite age to watch baseball, but that team just didn't have the same emotional connection. But
unless you felt emotionally connected to Curt Schilling and Jonathan Papelbon.
I kind of did feel emotionally connected to Jonathan Papelbon.
And Mike Lowell doubles all
day. Ellsbury is the guy I remember from that season, oddly enough. He didn't really play that much, but Ellsbury is my favorite player ever on the Red Sox, so.
By the way, Brian, I lied about my age in 04. I was a senior.
I knew
in
you
school.
Were. I knew you were older than that.
Yeah.
So I was in eighth grade, and you're more than a year old.
I was just – I wasn't thinking about the math. But, yeah, I was a
As
senior.
I said, you're a history teacher.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, I remember being in there in 03 playoffs as a junior and just, like, having my heart broken. So that's 04. Yep, love it. Let's get to listener questions here. So we have a whole slew of listener questions at the beginning that I'm going to kind of take as a whole from Eric Bowers, Logan Hoke, Matthew Kitson, Leonardo Pereira, Dirty Water Rants, Jake Soberman, and Chad Henderson, and a few others about free agents on the team. So we'll get to a few of these. Guys, who do you think is going to be the closer on the team next season? Do you see the team bringing Kimbrel back?
Probably not. I don't know. I haven't thought about next year.
I haven't either.
I haven't really thought about thinking about next year.
I just want to sleep.
Yeah, if I had to guess right now, I would say they're not going to bring in any kind of big closer, and they're going to kind of trust Cora to figure it out, but I don't know.
Yeah, I
wouldn't be totally
shocked. I'd be more. I think it's more likely that they'd sign Kelly, frankly.
I think I agree.
And figure out between Barnes, Kelly, and Brazier that situation.
Well, I think Barnes would be the easy favorite.
Sure, but I think that is, especially with the way Kimbrel was for a lot of the stretch, fine with me.
Yeah, I don't think they bring him back. I don't know if it's going to be Barnes or Kelly or any of those guys. It could be someone like an Adam Ottavino that they bring in from outside the organization too. But I don't
know. If you just like drop his name, like that's just like, oh yeah, if you saw a $100 bill lying on the street, would you pick it up? Yes, I would.
I mean, why wouldn't you want to sign with the Sox?
I think if they sign anyone, it's going to be Herrera. I don't know if it's going to happen. But
if they sign Herrera, do you think he's automatically the closer over Barnes and Kelly? If they re-sign Kelly?
Yeah, no question.
Interesting. I'm not sure if he's better, but yeah.
I don't think it matters if he's better.
I feel like he won't. The contingency of him signing the deal is that he's
great. Yeah, I think you guys are right about that. But I think we all agree, probably not Kimbrel. Do we think that the Red Sox are going to try and bring back either Eovaldi or Pierce?
Are they going to try? Absolutely.
Both?
Yes. I don't know if they're – I don't think they're going to get both, but I think they're going to try.
I think they're definitely going to bring back Pierce.
I was thinking too.
Eovaldi might be – they might be priced out of him because he's 28 and everybody has seen what he just did.
The thing with Eovaldi, and I agree with you, but I'm curious because he's had so many arm issues and it sucks because he just put his body on the line in the playoffs, but I think that might come back to bite him. I don't know how much, but I wouldn't be surprised if teams are scared off now. The guy's had two Tommy John surgeries and then he just like he wouldn't stop throwing baseballs for a month.
Yeah, I mean, you say that and I understand like it comes back to bite him in one sense, but
no, yeah, I mean, financially, I'm not saying he regrets it.
In the fulfillment sense, like, how, what could you – I mean, if that he pitched and that they lost the game, like, narratively, it's so wonderful. It's great. Like, I didn't see until the next morning. Like, I got emotional, which I generally do not do about this stuff anymore, when I saw how the team welcomed him back into the dugout.
Oh, yeah.
After the Muncy home run, I was like, man, they knew they saw something special. Like, that was – I didn't see – I mean, I saw some of it.
Yeah, I'm not saying Eovaldi's going to, like, regret what he did in the postseason or anything like that. I'm just saying as far as Boston getting priced out, I think they will too, but I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he gets less than we're thinking he's going to get.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I agree. He has had an extensive injury history, and I think a lot of teams might not trust the fact that he really has changed to the degree that we've seen. The next one, should the Sox extend Joe Kelly or re-sign Joe Kelly? Do you guys think they will or should?
I don't know. I don't know what he's going to get. I wouldn't go crazy for him. I'll say that.
Yeah, me neither, but I'd take him.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, he's – I do think there are – I mean, it in general applies to all positions, but very – and more functionally applies to the bullpen and role players. It's like that's just a value – at any given time, it's just a value proposition. It will – it may come down to both of them – if they want to stay in Boston and take a slight pay cut and whether that's valuable enough to them. But we'll see.
Yeah, I could see some team really paying him and the Red Sox not matching. But if he can come back for something reasonable for him, I think they should do it because he's been very durable. But this kind of leads me to another question that I wanted to ask you guys. Rethinking the trade that they made with the Cardinals, does his performance now in the postseason and basically over the last year and change the fact that the Red Sox, you know, have been thought to have lost that trade? Do you guys change your opinion on that trade now?
I still think it was a bad trade, but I guess it's not. I don't think it's as bad. Yeah, I think they definitely could have gotten more for Lackey, but it's hard to argue with how important Kelly was in this postseason, so.
Yeah, and I mean, Jake, if you believe in clubhouse guys, if anybody does,
I do.
I mean, Joe Kelly is a clubhouse guy.
Yeah.
So that counts on that front.
Yeah, I think it's a lot closer than we thought it was, and this changes the equation quite a bit. What we got from
him. Oh, so you traded John Lackey? What? That's not. There's no. Well, how can that trade be bad? By definition, it's
they good. Should have traded for prospects.
I don't care how good he is, and that's true.
He did not want to be here anyway. Michael Chavis, do you guys see him on the Sox next year in any fashion?
I thought you were saying that Michael Chavis asked us a question.
Thanks for checking in, Michael. Yeah, I see him on the Red Sox next year.
Do you think he's going to break camp with the team?
No.
What do you think, like August?
July, August, yeah, something like that.
Okay. Bri?
Yeah, it's I mean, that seems about right.
If he's not traded, I think there's no question. I think it's more a matter of if he gets traded or not, and I don't think he will.
And I think if he does get traded, the team that trades for him is going to put him in the lineup anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you only have one, Eovaldi or Kimbrel, for next year, who do you take?
I think if Kimbrel. You ask me in a month.
I take Kimbrel.
Yeah, I'm going to say Eovaldi, but I think if you ask me in maybe even a week, I'm going to know the answer is Kimbrel. But right now, I'm just like riding this absurd high, and I'm just going to run with it.
You guys know.
See, the fact that you are still high, like you know you're high, but you still know that you're high. But you are wrong because
I know I'm
as
wrong.
You know, Kimbrel when Kimbrel is functioning well, he has a talent level.
Oh yeah, no,
that is just naturally higher than others.
Can I say one more thing about Kimbrel?
You may.
Did you guys see his dad's beard?
No,
dude.
Oh my god,
it's more gnarly than his.
It is.
Yes.
Amazing. It's more metal. Did you see it, Brian?
Yes, I did.
I'm going to DM it to you, Jake. It is a sight to behold.
Jake, just.
I'm going to really enjoy this, aren't I?
I hope so. I'm going to feel really dumb if you didn't. Oh, shit. Did I give you the wrong link?
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, that's. that is something.
It doesn't look possible.
No,
like
it looks like
one of those beards you put like behind your ears.
Wow, that thing.
Jake,
like,
what did you think you were gonna see compared with what you did see?
I really thought it was gonna be a little bit more like Kimbrel's, but this looks like something you could go buy at the store and just.
I've never seen a person with a beard like that. It's unbelievable.
That is something.
Anybody listening who hasn't seen it, you look at June Lee's Twitter page. He's got it somewhere on there.
So I'm taking Eovaldi here over Kimbrel, and it's not that close for me. I just you know my problems with Kimbrel. Anybody who's listened to the show before.
Yeah, I knew when you asked the question.
Yeah. All right, so let's skip to Nate Olson's question. He asks, if you only had to keep two catchers, who would they be? This is an interesting question, especially with Vasky. And who would you sign to be a right-handed platoon with Moreland? Insurance for Pedroia, I think that's probably going to be Nunez.
Holt,
yep, he's going to be in there as well. Let's talk about the catcher part of this because I think that's the most interesting one. We got into an argument about this like 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago at this point. And I thought you were insane for not wanting to keep Leon next year. And I no longer think I am. And I'm willing to eat crow on that. So
Vasquez looked incredible in the second half of this postseason run. Like, he didn't really do that much. And I don't think he's that good of a hitter. But if he's putting up at bats like that, good things are going to happen.
So
that was the thing. It was just all good at bats. It was really something to watch. Like, you could see him going through it, like on his face.
From like the sixth inning or like ninth inning or whatever in game three until the seventh inning of game four, Vasquez was the best hitter on the team for like that, whatever it was, like
he was really
12
inning
stretch.
Well.
Yeah, he was hitting the ball well. Sometimes it was fine in the fielders, but he was hitting the ball well, and he was fouling off pitches that were hard to hit, and he was taking good pitches. It was impressive.
So
he's going to be the starter next year.
I actually think that if it was up to me, and this is going to really hurt the feelings of everybody who is into my Blake Swihart brand right now.
You trading Swihart?
I would trade Swihart. With this current team, the way that it is, because I don't think you get a lot for trading Leon. And I think that Leon is a better fit for this team defensively with the staff as well. And I think that Blake Swihart is the perfect candidate for a team that is rebuilding, like a guy that you want to work with the staff every single day. And I don't think that he's going to get that ability here. And I think that if you're going to carry two catchers, you want the second one to be a really competent defensive guy, just like your primary catcher is. So I think that you know, the way that this team is constructed, it makes a shitload more sense for them to have Vasquez in Lyon behind the plate all year than it does to try and work Swihart in there, because he's still not a finished product at catcher, and there's no way he could be with the amount of time that he got there this year. So, yeah, I do think you need to trade him.
Yeah!
I actually disagree.
Really?
We're flipping. I would get rid of Lyon.
Yeah, I think at this point...
I don't think you get much for Swihart either in a trade.
Yeah.
That's basically my...
I mean, and I'm not saying that Swihart's not better. I think Swihart has the potential to be better than both of these guys, but I just think that they don't have time to wait for him.
I'm an idiot.
What's that?
I said he should be starting before the playoffs, or the whole column, but I was wrong. I mean, maybe who knows? Maybe he would have. Maybe they would have won sooner.
And this doesn't mean I don't like him. I love the guy.
I think... there's arguments on both sides for Lyon versus Swihart. And I don't think you're crazy for arguing either side. But I think Vasquez, and I'm a little worried that I'm going too much off a small sample, but also I'm very confident in saying that Vasquez should be the guy next year.
He's also very good defensively.
Yeah, I think people way overblew his struggles at the beginning of the year, defensively and offensively.
I don't think anyone within the Red Sox organization
I'm talking
ever doubt. No, I know. But, like, I don't think they have ever doubted his defensive.
No. I mean, they gave him the extension for a reason.
Yeah.
It really looks like Yadi's much better, but, like, you could put him in there. Like, he's got – Yadi wasn't always a good hitter. He's got the attitude too. I think that he's got the build and the attitude.
He might be a 60% approximation of Yadi. Yadi is
perfect, right? Knockoff.
I think he's got a better chance of being Benji than Yadi.
Next question comes from Yolo Swaggins, and this is a nutso question here. Rafael Devers for Brad Hand.
The fuck out of here, Yolo Swaggins.
That's banana land right there. That's a wild
one. If your name is Yolo, ask a question like that.
Next one comes from Smokey Rains, and he says, at what point do we call the win the World Series play? After ALDS game 2, spring training, Joe Kelly Fight Club game. When did you guys feel like this team really was going to win the whole thing?
I'm writing about this tomorrow, but that sweep of the Yankees, that was the obvious season right there, I think.
Hard to argue with
that. Wow, you mean you thought...
I didn't know they were going to win the World Series, but that was... I mean, that put the division away. That, like, you knew that they were for real after they finished that sweep.
Yeah, I thought it was when they won game one of the ALCS. Like, it was once they got past the Yankees, once you get past the five-game series, that's what terrified me. And then they won a Verlander game, and then I was like, okay, they're going to lose. I had that feeling. I had the same feeling you did when they swept the Yankees, because it has always looked to me this season like a Yankee season where, like, they kick our asses in August and September, and then they kick everyone's ass in the playoffs. And that's what it ended up being. But odds are always that it's not going to be that. It just ended up being that. So I didn't feel that at the time, because I was just saying, I don't expect this to continue. But it did.
I'm going to say I felt it after game 2 of the World Series when the game ended and I was in the bleachers.
Jeez, you guys are like, you're just bragging about being in the bleachers, you prick.
I'm the only pure of heart here.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Matt. What does it mean?
What's wrong with my heart?
You thought that they were going to win the World Series.
No, okay, so I guess you guys took this question more literally than me. I thought this team was special at that point. Yeah, I wasn't listening. I don't know. When did I think they were going to win the World Series? When Steve Pierce hit that. Actually, I guess when Steve Pierce tied the game in game four.
Okay.
We want to go that far, but I think
that's a good one. That's a real one.
The August sweep was the biggest moment of the series, the season, I think, for me.
I think the biggest single moment of the regular season has to be the Mookie Betts Grand Slam. Just in terms of, like,
that was the most
hype.
Yeah, that was the most hype moment for sure.
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy, crazy moment. But I agree that the August sweep is the thing that is what I'm probably going to most remember from the regular season.
Well, that's the thing with the 2004 team. They just went on a huge winning streak in August, and they just blistered everyone. They went out west and just killed everyone. And that's
that every month this year, except for September.
Yeah, they did.
Next question. Patrick Whittle asks us, who do you think are the key free agents to bring back? We kind of already tackled that, so we're going to skip over that. Dakota Slate asks, why was Drew Pomerantz even on the playoff roster? I don't know, to bring Gatorade to people?
This is incredible. I can't believe Pomerantz didn't pitch in a game. I don't remember when it was, but there was – the Red Sox were up by 5 in game 4, I thought for sure that was the Pomerantz moment for that 9th inning. Just, like, throw him a token inning, and they wouldn't even give him that.
What the hell was the purpose of him being on this?
Just an extra lefty?
Yeah. They just didn't need it.
Jeremy asks us, is this the worst 119 win of all time, win team of all time?
It's the only 119 win team of all time, I think. So, it's the best after talking worst. Exactly.
Nice try, Jeremy. We went to college.
Brian, how do I pronounce this guy's last name?
Oh, I'm supposed to be looking at the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Sidlick.
Sidlick?
Sidlick.
Sidlick?
I guess.
I have no idea.
All right, whatever.
Thomas, I'll look it up. What are the biggest obstacles to a repeat? Health?
Baseball?
Yeah.
The Astros? Yeah, like you're not supposed to be this good.
The Astros also, and Yankees?
Nobody's repeated in 20 years.
Yeah.
Tangent. Who? If Harper has indeed decided on the team, who do you think it is?
Is that true? Did I really hear that?
Yeah. No, he.
I thought it was like hallucinating that one.
That's what Boris said. The Braves.
Phillies.
Yeah, I like the Phillies. I think.
I don't like the Phillies, but I think that.
He would hit 1,000 home runs in Citizens Bank Park.
He should.
If he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
Well, if they sign him, they're definitely signing Machado, too.
I think they're going to sign both.
That would be bananas.
Actually, no, I don't. The Yankees are getting Machado.
Yankees fans hate Machado, kind of.
Well, the Yankees fans don't run the team.
True. I hope they get him so they have to hate him.
That step on the ankle shit is so...
It was garbage. I hate Manny Machado.
I hate him, too. He's a piece
of
shit.
But I mean, the fact that he made the last out.
It was perfect. Did you see the thing?
The K?
The K. That was amazing.
I half thought Sale was going to drill him in the back and face the next batter at the end of that game. There was a piece of me that thought he was going to.
Because you live with anger.
Sale had nothing on his mind but strike him out.
Oh, it would have been great, though. Just right between the shoulder blades.
The strikeout.
Oh, man. It would have been terrifying. Don't say that.
All right, Dan has our next question. Can we still call them champions knowing that they didn't beat a single team with a better record than them the entire year?
Dan, very, very nice, Dan.
That was good.
Soft on breath. On breath.
Thank you, Brian. When are they going to face real competition? That's for you, Matt. And what's the most likely thing to go wrong next year after going right this year? That's an interesting one.
Health.
Yeah.
Stars.
Health and baseball.
Yep.
As far as the Red Sox facing real competition, I said that after the win yesterday. A lot of Dodgers fans got mad at me. And I kind of felt bad because I guess if you're not a Red Sox fan, you don't understand the reference. But it wasn't a shot at the Dodgers. Dodgers are very good.
Dodgers are a filthy team.
I feel bad for the Dodgers because they're very good. And that was not –
indicative.
It just keeps happening to them.
I felt like the whole playoffs effectively was, in terms of pressure, as just as a viewer, pressure on me as a viewer was totally reversed.
Do you guys think Dodgers fans hate Manny Machado?
No. I follow a lot of Dodgers fans on Twitter. I don't think. I think Dodgers fans hate the Dodgers.
Okay.
Is what I'm kind of getting. I feel that they've had some tough. They've had a tough run. I feel really bad for Dodgers fans.
I don't.
It's been a while, and I remember every year of it, which is wild.
One in my lifetime. But I mean, even just like the last few years, they've gotten so close. Last year was worse than this year, I think. But I don't know. I have a lot of friends that are Dodgers fans, so I like them. I want them to be happy.
Vinny Spooky asks, if the MLB reinstated the player manager position, who on this Red Sox team is best fit to do the job?
I mean, this is I don't know, one of the catchers or shortstops or relievers. No.
Pedroia.
It's either. Oh, Pedroia doesn't count. He's basically a manager already. It's a combination. You have to combine the personalities of JD Martinez and Brock Holt. And that would be the perfect manager. JD Martinez is a teacher, and Brock Holt is just a crazy person.
No, we have this totally backward. Just let Alex Cora play.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. Colby Cushing asks our next question. He says, what was the best managerial decision made by Cora in the postseason, and how tall should Eovaldi's statue be when they inevitably build it outside of Fenway? And he asks us about our favorite moment in the World Series, but we already talked about that, so we'll talk about the first two.
Every decision Alex Cora made was the best.
No, pinch hitting,
except for the one you don't like.
Pinch hitting Devers for Nunez in Game 4. That was big.
Or pinch hitting Nunez for Devers in Game 1.
Yep. No, I got you guys, and you're going to agree with me. Starting Price in Game 5.
That is good. That that makes me very scared about what's going to happen in the next few days, but it was good.
I think this is the second question we've gotten in the history of this show, how tall a statue should be. We got one about what material a statue should be too. You guys remember that one from way back?
Yeah, you guys started talking about metals, and I was very impressed with how much metallic knowledge you guys have.
What do you guys think for height on this one?
How tall is Nate Eovaldi?
God damn it.
6'4", 6'5".
I really liked that was going to be my answer.
Is he that tall?
I think so.
I think he's
6'2", according to Wikipedia.
6'2"?
That's not that tall.
He's a beast, though. I don't know. Make him 10'2".
Matt, how tall are you?
6'1".
God damn it. Jake and I are not. Jake's not 6'1".
No, definitely not. Ward asks our next question. He says, excuse me, what fact, stat, or result from the playoffs would have surprised you the most at the start of the playoffs? I really like this question.
Any stat you want to give about Joe Kelly? Oh,
that's where I was going, man.
Kelly. I think that's the most obvious answer. I mean,
yep.
No. It's Eovaldi.
I had more faith. Don't get me wrong, I definitely didn't expect this from Eovaldi. I had zero. I didn't want Joe Kelly on the playoff roster.
Okay, I'll say it's Eovaldi with the caveat that, like, the stat line includes the game started thing. So you can see zero next to the innings pitch and be like, the fuck happened here? So there you go. That's mine.
Yeah, it's Joe Kelly all the way for me. Annie Small asks us favorite postseason moment. We talked about that, so we're going to skip over that one. And then the last one, Kyle says, are the 2018 Red Sox the best team of all time or just the best team ever?
What does that mean?
I'm not sure.
No, this is a great question. I'm trying to think what's actually the difference between.
So why'd you say it's a great question? You don't get it either.
Because I because you have to think about the question.
Is he talking about like how much of a team they are in the sense of like how much they love each other?
Like, I can give him too much credit. I think Kyle is just having some fun on Twitter.
This is what I'm saying, and it's fun for me. But I will say that they are the time is a construct, so the best team ever.
They are in the conversation, which is all that matters. It's like the LeBron versus MJ debates. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter. It's just the fact that it's the conversation between them two is all that matters. So the Red Sox are hard to beat.
I'm going to say that the only comparison I can make to this Red Sox team in terms of like how cohesive they are is from a different sport in Boston. I think the 08 through 2011 Celtics loved each other to the same degree that these Red Sox do, and that is a very unique thing in sports to me. So,
Jake, don't say very unique around me.
Fine. That does it. That does it for this edition of the show. This has been the 100th episode. It was long. It was good. We did it, guys. We've been with the listeners here throughout the entire season, and it's been an absolute pleasure recording with both of you and our many guests over the course of the season. We're going to be with you again next year. We're going to be with you in the off season. We're probably going to make the podcast a little less frequent in the off season, maybe bi-weekly or something like that. We'll talk about it. We'll let you guys
bi-weekly
know.
Mean twice a week.
No. Every 2 weeks.
That's semi-weekly.
No. Sorry, everyone. No, it's every 2 weeks or twice a week.
No.
Yeah.
According to
Google. No. Semi-weekly is twice a week.
Bi-weekly is.
Do you know why it's in there? Because people were wrong so often that they added it.
I disagree.
I trust Google more than you.
Anyhow.
How could it be both at one time?
It's like Aloha.
Any closing thoughts on this this third season of The Red Seat?
Aloha.
Yeah, 100 came at the perfect time.
Really did. Brian, how about you?
It was to me that this one is the most closely. I mean, this and 07 by far are the two most closely associated with the regular season, where it just continued through. That's what it felt like, a freight train.
All right. We were asking about the podcast, but
that's a good place to end it.
I like the deep dive there.
I didn't realize you were talking about the podcast. Who cares about the podcast?
Oh, wow. My feelings are really hurt now.
No, I mean, I'm here. It's been, how long is this podcast, Jay?
About an hour and 20.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed the show, please go on, rate and review us. Tell us that we did a good job this year or not. Subscribe to us. And we'll be with you with all the off-season news with your World Series champ Red Sox. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Matt on Twitter at MattRYCollins. You can follow Brian on Twitter at @BrianJoyner, Brian with Y, Joyner with an I. You can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake, and you can follow the Over the Monster account at @OverTheMonster. And we'll be with you next time.
Bye, shirts.